Welcome to Wild Connection, the podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. I'm a scientist and author that studies animal behavior. I'm passionate about animals, and I love helping people reconnect with nature to live better lives. This podcast is about you, other animals, and how we're all connected in this wild and crazy thing called life. Before I get to this week's guest, I wanted to give a little bit of background about how this podcast series, Voices of Uganda, came about as part of my Fulbright. In fact, it relates to this week's guest in that it was all about the birds. So, a little bit of context. In conversations with some organizations in Windy Impenetrable Forest, back in 2021, one of the things that emerged was how much ecotourism is responsible for driving some of the economics of the area and, in many cases, improving people's lives. However, when COVID hit and all of tourism ground to a halt, people in these communities really suffered. And in that conversation, an example of someone who had suffered was a local bird guide. And what I realized was that that bird guide still retained all of their knowledge about the birds, but had no one to share it with. And from there came the concept of my Fulbright project, which is collaborative course development with local community experts under a profit-sharing model. More about that in the future. But in addition, I wanted people to be able to hear from those living around Bwindi Impenetrable Forest, making a living around Bwindi Impenetrable Forest, and giving them a voice to talk about their experience, their knowledge, and whatever they wanted to share. And so here we come full circle. It started with birds, and now this week's guest is a spectacular person and local bird guide, Apafia Asimwe.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Wild Connection, the podcast. And we are coming live from Bwindi Impenetrable Forest here in Bungoma. I'm here with Apafia Asimwe, who is a local bird guide. And we have spent the morning looking for birds all around the secondary forest. And I'm just so thrilled to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And so you have always lived in Bungoma?
Yes, I'm born in Bungoma, and I still stay in Bungoma.
Okay, wonderful. Well, we had such a nice time this morning, and we're going to talk about specific birds. But first, I'd love for everybody to get to know you a little bit better. And so you've grown up here, but when did you start to become interested in birding?
I was still young when my father used to sell fruits nearby a lodge. And I used to see some colorful birds, but I didn't know them. Then when I grew up, I went into my primary school, later high school, and I went to the training college of wildlife management. Then, of course, it included animals and birds. So that's how I got interested in birds. Then I had to learn more about birds.
Okay. And I remember when we were talking earlier, you also told me that there was a legend or a bird that represented sort of a bad omen, and that this bird in particular also sparked your interest and curiosity. So can you tell me a little bit about what that bird was and what the story is?
The bird is an African wood owl. So we had a sick person. He was our neighbor, and he was sick. Then in the evening, the African hood owl had to call. As you know, these birds roost during daytime and they become active at night. So when the bird called in the morning, the other sick person died. And people had to say, we had an African hood owl calling. That means when it calls nearby and you have a sick person, automatically that's death.
Right. And it's so interesting because owls are also a bad omen in many other cultures. And so you heard that there was this call. You knew that unfortunately the neighbor died. And what did you think? You thought you have to figure out, is it true?
When I grew up, I had to make sure that I say if true, this bird is a bad, it has a bad omen. But when I understood it was its call, that's how it calls.
Then you knew that was just a story.
Yeah, just a story.
Yeah. And so do people still believe that about the owl?
Local people deep in the villages, they still believe in that. But my family, since I learned birds, they don't believe in it.
Right.
Because I had to teach them. I taught them that's how the bird calls.
Okay. And, you know, so many birders and bird guides use calls of birds because they're so important to helping to identify birds. So how many birds do we have here in Bwindi?
We have 350 birds. And out of those birds, we have 14 endemic birds to the Albertine Rift Valley.
Wow. And this is such a hotspot of biodiversity. It's one of the reasons why it is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And so of those birds, how many have you seen?
I've seen 99% of them. And of course, the primary forest birds are easily heard than seen.
Okay, and so why is that? Because I've been in the primary forest many times and I almost never see a bird, but I hear them, but I never see them.
This is because these birds feed in different positions, like undergrowth. Others feed up in the canopies. So if you are not patient, you will never see these birds. You have to be patient, you call them and wait for them.
Okay. And so what is your primary source that you use for calls for birds? Like what resource do you use?
We whistle to call them. And the modern one, we use these speakers.
Okay. And yeah. And so do you use I know many people use the Cornell ornithology library, or do you just search the internet for the call and play it, or do you have a particular app that you use?
We use, like me, I use the eBird to the birds of East Africa.
Oh, nice. Okay. So eBird is a huge database.
eGuide.
Oh, eGuide.
Yeah, eGuide to the birds of East Africa.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
Yes.
You've been birding and being a local guide for about 6 years.
Yes.
And what do you love most about birds?
I like the way they sing. These birds in the morning, they help most of my community as their alarm, because not everyone can afford the cell phone. So, and also we have these birds that imitate. Imagine a bird imitates in another call, and if you go to see it, you find it's another bird. So that's how I got, I love hearing these birds calling. And also we have the great blue tulaco, which has most good colors. You might think it's a lipstick bird, like when you say it clearly.
Yes. And in fact, we just saw one this morning. We were looking for it earlier and then we finally found it, and it is beautiful. And it does look like it has lipstick on the end of its bill. So that is a wonderful name for it. You said that that one of the things you love is the calls and how some birds can act like an alarm.
Yeah. And the colors, they have natural colors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so is there... So when it comes to the alarm of birds, is there one particular bird that is an excellent keeper of time?
We have the great blue tulaco,
we have the year-round Tinkerbird actually calls at 5:30.
Yes, I know. And we'll play the Tinkerbird for the audience a little bit later because it wakes me up every day at about 5:30. And so are there any other, like, we were talking about the cuckoo. And so what is special about the cuckoo that you have here?
We have different cuckoo shrikes, but these cuckoo are lazy. They cannot hatch the eggs. So what they do, they will find other nests which has eggs. Then they will drop those eggs down, put their eggs, and these birds will hatch the cuckoo's eggs. And at the end, the chicks will be out. And then, of course, the bird has to be surprised. Oh, I have a big chick.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you were telling me earlier that local people have known for a long time that the wagtail can raise a cuckoo chick.
Yeah, actually, they said a wagtail can produce a cuckoo shrike.
Oh, a wagtail can produce a cuckoo shrike. Okay.
Yeah.
But they must have not been confused. How is it that a wagtail can produce a cuckoo shrike?
Actually, that's what forced me to learn birds and go deep into details. So as my people won't be again like convinced that a wagtail can produce a cuckoo shrike.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and speaking of your people and your tribe, what is your tribe?
I'm a Muchiga by tribe.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Ruchiga is the language.
Yeah, and we speak Ruchiga.
Okay. And are there different, well, so what is the word for bird in Ruchiga?
Enyonyi.
Enyonyi. Okay. And just for a little bit of fun, I've noticed, because we're, you know, and we're still going to talk about birds, but I've noticed that a lot of animals, their names start with E.
Yeah, most of them.
Right. So Ngaji is gorilla.
The gorilla, yeah.
And then we have Njojo.
Yeah, elephant.
Yeah. And then the regular chameleon is
Mpoma.
And then the special three-horned chameleon is, I forget that one.
Inyaruju.
Inyaruju.
Yeah.
And then a cat, like a serval or golden cat or lion. Like what is the?
Entade.
Entade. Okay. Yeah. So many animals start with E. Is there any particular reason in the language for that? Or is that just how it is?
No, it is just because we have these names, like these vowels. So most of them, people use E. Yeah, most of.
Okay.
Yeah, most of them.
And I'm curious about one more, Diker. What is the name for Diker?
Efumbili.
Efumbili.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So as you can see, I am practicing my Ruchiga and trying desperately to learn. But back to birds.
Yeah.
So, you know, what do you love most about what you do?
First, number one is only these colors. These birds have natural colors. People go to look for paintings, but these birds have no market. They don't know, they don't go anyway. They just have their natural colors. Like when you look at the Losi's tulako, you can see it's as if it is putting on red and black.
Yeah.
Yeah, so most of the times we call it the Valentine bird. Yeah.
Yeah, the Valentine bird.
So they have
natural colors. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
The Valentine bird. And that means that we celebrate Valentine's Day here.
Yes.
Which is lovely. And so what you love about what you do is that you get to experience all of these birds and their wonderful colors.
Yes, and their behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there any particular behavior that really, you mentioned imitating, right? That. And so is there a particular bird that's really good at imitating the call of another bird?
Yes, especially these robin chats, they imitate. And you may think it can even imitate in a sound of an eagle. And you may think an eagle is too close. So the reason why they imitate, they want their other birds to come cross and they feed together.
Oh, so are they safer when they're feeding with other birds? Is that one of the reasons or?
Sometimes these birds, when they feed, they leave other food, especially these fiscals. When they are feeding, they get their own food, feed, then they leave the rest for other birds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and so by calling an eagle, you cause those birds to leave.
Yes.
Okay. That's pretty clever. Is there any other behavior that you have been surprised by that when you learned about it, you were like, what? This bird does this?
These birds also do swim.
What?
Yeah, but swim.
They do?
Yes. Like during on the main road, these swallows, when it rains, you find they are nearby the water bodies. They're also preening themselves as they swim.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, as kind of swimming.
Oh, that's pretty neat. I haven't seen that. I have heard all the frogs when you have all those, the collection of water after rain, but I've never seen one. I keep looking and I can't see one. I only hear it. Okay. And so when it comes to, because I know with you, and I want to point out too, you're the only female bird guide here.
Yes.
And I love that. And it's one of the reasons why we've spent so much time together is because I want to make sure to support another woman in her profession. And you're so knowledgeable and you're so passionate about what you do. And so, you know, what do you enjoy most about taking other people birding?
You know, there's been a saying that a man can do this. This is for a man. A man can go for good at trekking. A man can drive. So I enjoy when I have different sexes, taking them for bird watching. I do hiking and I'm the one doing it myself and I'm a lady.
Yes.
Yeah.
And has that been a challenge though to convince, other tourists that they should come with you bird guiding as opposed to going with a man?
Of course, has been a challenge. Like when you're not connected, you will not get business and people will come knowing other friends. And also, some are always, they say, really, can she do bird watching for a day? Can a woman do that? So they're not always sure mm-hmm. that a woman can do that.
Well, I'm here to tell you, us women, we can absolutely do that. And I think one of the things that people don't appreciate as an animal behaviorist and you as a bird guide and birder and observer of birds, that women actually are much better at learning behavior, predicting where other species are going to be. It's well documented that we are much, much better than men at this particular skill. So I think it's wonderful that you are leading the way in this community to show how skilled women can be at what has been traditionally viewed as a man's job. And so I'm wondering, you know, do you see yourself also as a role model for other girls in the community?
Yeah, so far there's one girl, but she's still in her primary school. And once she's in her holidays, she keeps coming to our home that she wants to be like me. She wants to learn birds.
And how does it feel to have someone looking up to you like that?
Of course, I also get excited and be like, oh, someone also admires me. Yeah, so I become happy and I'm ready to help her out.
That's great.
Yeah.
And is it difficult to get, did you train yourself? I know you went to schooling and learned about all different types of animals, including birds. But have you taught yourself to identify and know the birds that you're most likely to find here in Bwindi?
Usually nearby the community, I used to walk around. Then after walking around, I check the bird that I have seen. Then I go into the book and read on it, I confirm with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But in the forest, there was a teacher whom I used to go with. Yeah, but he's now retired.
Okay, so you had a mentor.
Yeah.
That's lovely. That's wonderful. So getting back to the birds, you know, we mentioned already that Windy is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. There's 350 birds.
Yes.
14 are endemic.
Yeah.
What are the most common birds that if someone were to come here, they could expect to see when they go out with you?
Yes.
For a birding experience?
Yeah, you expect to see robinjets, most of them. We have over four types of them. Yeah, you can see the cockshrikes, weaver birds. We have the turacos, the most beautiful ones. We have the wagtails. Yeah, we can see the seed eaters and the swallows on the wires. We have other like these big birds, the hornbills. Yeah, of course, in the trees and more and more and more.
Yeah. And so what is the rarest bird that you find many tourists come here just desperate to see?
Many tourists come to see the African green broadbill, but it has been named into the grower's broadbill.
Okay. And have you ever seen one?
Yes.
Oh, okay. When did you see your first grower's broadbill?
Yeah, the grower's broadbill.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when I was still learning, I wanted to see that green broadbill. When you see it, if you are not careful, you may think it's a leaf.
Wow.
All green.
Really?
Yeah. I saw it earlier and I've been seeing it whenever I go to Rhodesia. And in 2019, around Bohoma, we had the sights of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and so that brings up a really interesting point that we're currently in Bohoma, yes. But you also take clients in Rhodesia and in
Mogahinga
and what about Rushaga?
Yes.
Yes. Rushaga. And so Mogahinga is a different park, but Rushaga, Rhodesia and Bohoma are all different areas, yes, of windy impenetrable forest.
Yes.
And so we were talking earlier that particular bird, you only would see it here in Bohoma maybe during the nesting season.
The only particular bird?
The broadbill, the grower's broadbill.
Yeah, during the nesting season, that's when you can see it because it spends more time. But otherwise, you don't get a chance.
Right.
Yeah.
But in Rhodesia, you find it in the swamps. Is that right?
Yeah, in Rhodesia, you find it in the swamp.
Yes. Okay. And I love that you have your expertise in all the different areas. Are there any migratory birds, that sometimes are here only during certain times of the year and then they're gone? Or are these always resident birds?
No, we have the intra-African migrants and we have also these birds that go away, European birds.
Oh, okay. So really, yeah, we get European birds,
yeah,
here.
Yeah, like the European bee eaters.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. You've been doing this for a while. And what do you, you mentioned sometimes about patience.
Yeah.
I think we were talking about in the primary forest. You said that you have to be patient, patient, patient. And otherwise you won't see anything. And how do you as a bird guide deal with maybe people that aren't impatient and they only want to see one particular bird and they miss everything along the way?
Yes. Yeah, so usually when we see that these people are desperately looking for those rare birds, yeah, we wake up early in the morning and we pass through the secondary growth forest, then we go into the primary forest. Then we reserve some time. It is me to reserve some time later in the evening, and we come slowly passing through the secondary growth forest so as it can be a complementary.
Yeah. And what I've been so amazed with is because, you know, we haven't gone into the primary forest together, but we've gone into the secondary forest now twice. And, you know, I want everybody to understand, you know, how exquisite your eyesight is and how you are able to spot things. And I'm desperately searching. You're like, do you see it? No, no. Where is it? Everything looks the same. And somehow you can find it. And what I love is you have a tool that you use, a really special way of helping, you know, people like me who can't see anything find it. Can you describe what you use to help us be able to see what you somehow can naturally see?
Yeah, it's a green laser pointer that we use to show the direction where the bird is. We don't always point direct to the bird, but we point above the bird or below the bird or on top of, or maybe if it's in the tree and we point at the bottom.
Yeah, and it's been so helpful. And is there a reason why you use green and not red?
Yeah, of course, green is nature and red sometimes scares birds away.
Speaking of scaring birds, I was really interested in something you mentioned where, you know, if you keep calling and calling for the bird, even when it's already there, it can be stressful for the bird. And I think I had misunderstood thinking, oh, maybe it was a territorial thing. But what was it that you said? It was so interesting. I had never thought of that perspective, but why it would stress the birds.
Oh, it is like, you have seen the bird. It is like a few meters with you. And then you still want to use a tape to call it. You might not know where this tape, where it was recorded from. And you keep on stressing it, keep on calling it. And also it's not good to call a bird when you're seeing it.
Right.
So it may think, where is the partner?
Mm-hmm.
So like when you call a bird, you may think there is a partner or maybe opposite, but already you're calling it and you're seeing it and it's just in open. Yeah. It's not even seeing its partner.
Right.
And the same thing, the calls might not be the same.
Yeah, from what they're used to.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we have just started, by the way. And just to remind everyone, I'm here with the amazing Apafia Asimwe.
Thank you.
And did I say your last name or your second name correctly? Asimwe?
Yeah, Asimwe.
And what was the meaning of that again?
The meaning of Asimwe.
Yes.
It's a blessing.
A blessing, yeah. Yes. And I've been blessed by everyone giving me a name too, Mashemelewa. And so and that means happiness. And I'm very happy to be sitting here with you talking. I'm very, very happy that we are in the dry season at the moment. We have started the dry season. Can you tell me a little bit about the different seasons that the birds experience and like when do they nest and rear their offspring? And I think you were saying that some birds have two nesting periods. Can you tell me a little bit about the timing of things for birds here?
Yeah, so most of the times these birds, they target the dry season so as rain doesn't wash away their nests.
Oh, okay, yeah. I could see that because it rains a lot here.
Yeah, it rains a lot. And we are in the tropical rainforest where we expect rain even in the dry season.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So that means right now is when many birds are going to begin their nesting period.
They have already nested, so they are waiting for the eggs to be hatched.
Okay, so they've made their nest, they've laid their eggs, and then soon we're going to be having baby birds.
Yeah.
Okay, and then after this period, is there another time of year where they nest again? Or is it just once?
No. They will again nest in March.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really fast. So they're nesting now and then they nest again.
Of course, like the migratory birds,
mm-hmm.
especially the robin chats, we have the Natal robin chat that goes to South Africa
mm-hmm.
in May and comes back in November.
Okay.
So some migratory birds have to hatch their eggs very fast. So as they go,
right,
without leaving the immature baby birds, when they're not yet to feed themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And so then how do they spend the rest of the year? So during the, after March, if they've nested again, how do they spend the rest of the year? Are they just feeding or?
No, actually in March, the chicks are ready. They're already being hatched.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, again, another nesting will be in August.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, in August.
Yeah.
Well, that's fun that there's two nesting seasons. What is the best time of year for people to come here if they're really focused on birding?
Usually in June and July, because it is the dry season.
Okay.
And in December.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a second dry season in June, July.
Yeah.
And then in December, which is just past, right? We're recording actually on January 7th, 2023.
Yeah.
So this past December was also the best time for coming.
Yeah.
Okay. And does it vary depending on which part of Bwindi you're in? Meaning, is it always good, and whether you're Ruhija or Rushaga or in Buhoma, to come in June, July?
All year round, of course, the climate is the same. Yeah, it is. Of course, in the rainy season, you won't be able to see some birds, because they will run into their nests.
Mm-hmm.
Others, birds don't feed sometimes in the rain. Yeah. So when you come in the dry season, it's always good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also more less likely that you're going to get soaked when you're out looking for birds. You know, in fact, actually, gorilla trekking made the list for Bwindi, made the list, CNN list of top places to go to in 2023. But of course, I think people should be coming also for the birds. Is there anything that you would want people to know about what's so special about coming here for birding?
Yeah, most people do not know that after gorilla tracking, you have extra activities. You can enjoy your afternoon in the same forest or around the secondary growth forest during bird watching. And you enjoy seeing these birds frying, birds preening themselves, and also these birds feeding their babies. Yeah, and also you can reserve some time. Like after the tracking, you can have a next day and we spend time together in the forest.
Yes. And it's a wonderful time. And we spend a long time together the first time that we went. And so I think that I can't think of any better reason for people to come than even though, yes, gorillas are amazing, but you should stay for the birds and you should definitely get to know Apafia and have her teach you all about the birds here in Bwindi. Thank you so much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Okay, that was a wonderful show, and I'm so thrilled to have featured Apafia. And one of the birds that we talked about very briefly is the yellow-rumped tinkerbird. Now, you may have heard it somewhere in the distance, or you may not have heard it, but you're going to. One of the reasons why I want to feature this bird is a bit embarrassing. I would say that I never thought I could dislike a bird, especially such a tiny, harmless bird. But the yellow-rumped tinkerbird is one of those few birds that really knows how to get under your skin. Not only is it an excellent alarm clock at 5:30 in the morning, it sings all day long, even into the afternoon and then into the evening. I never knew that a bird so tiny could be so irritating in its sound. Now, why do I say this? Well, I say it because, for reference, if you've ever lived in the city and you've heard a car alarm go off and it doesn't get turned off, it quickly gets under your skin and irritates you. Perhaps it's the frequency of the sound. Perhaps it's the rhythm of the sound. Nevertheless, it is also the sound of the yellow-rumped tinker bird. And there you have it. That is essentially the sound of the yellow-rumped tinker bird. Very common around windy and impenetrable forest. And many people ended up being irritated with me because until that sound is pointed out, it can be easy to miss. But once you hear it, you never stop hearing it. So I dedicate this episode to the yellow-rumped tinker bird. Okay, that's it for this week, and thank you for listening. If you are interested in booking with Apophia Asimwe, you will find links to her Facebook page on the show notes. And I highly recommend her as your local bird guide when and if you should visit Bwindi Impenetrable Forest National Park in southwestern Uganda. If you're enjoying the show, please give it a like and share it with your friends. You can check out the show notes on my website, www.jennifervertelin.com, or on the podcast website, Wild Connection, the podcast hosted by Podbean. And of course, you can follow the show on Twitter at Wild Connect Pod, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Real Dr. Jen. Next week, we're going to be shifting our focus to talking to some people in the community around Windy Impenetrable Forest and many of the good works that they are doing to help protect wildlife and uplift people in the community. Thanks for listening.